Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long-forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season, or arc, has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, your weekly Doctor Who podcast for all of your Doctor Who news and reviews. I am Matthew Toflow, and I'm joined by Billy Garrett-John. Hello, Billy.
Hello, everybody. How are you all doing today? Hope you're doing well, because there's a lot to crack into with last night's story, isn't there?
There is. It's chapter 5 of Flux, the penultimate episode of the latest serial, called Survivors of the Flux. Other than talking about Flux, is there any Doctor Who news this week? Has anything happened? I don't think so.
Didn't that Christopher Eccleston Cyberman audio come out?
It did. Oh, yeah. I've got it here. It came today in the post.
There you go.
There you are. If you're watching on the YouTubes, you will see I've got the box set.
I would love to know how many physical sets they actually sell now, because I feel like as the appeal of Big Finish has broadened. Mm. They've obviously, probably as a result of that, switched to focusing on removing the monthly range, but box sets released digitally.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're selling those in as high volumes as they were before.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wonder how many they produce. And then, yeah, like you said, how many of those actually do get sold in the long run. I don't know. I mean, they do a lot of sales, don't they?
They do very well out of it. I wonder if the move to digital is to kind of make it more profitable.
Probably.
In that, so that they're spending less money on the packaging and the production of the physical things.
Yeah.
Focusing more on the audio. And also, I know this for a fact, they can pretty much just record everything remotely now. And they are now telling people, even if they're comfortable or happy to go back into studios, people are still recording from home because they just prefer to.
Yeah.
So that's saving a lot of money.
It's much cheaper, yeah.
God, is Big Finish in the green?
Oh my God.
Is it?
Could be.
Can you imagine?
And no one's making the Big Finish lunches anymore. So
no, exactly. So that probably saves in some wonga. But I think that was pretty much it, kind of news related for the week.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing else has happened, I don't think.
No.
We had it all the week before.
We had it all week. Last week was exciting. This week, we just had a new Doctor Who. I say that as if it's bad. It's brilliant. But I think we're probably both safe in our kind of estimations that this is our least favourite of the series so far.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, when I watched it last night, I came away thinking, oh, this is the episode that's taken the wind out of my sails a little. And I rewatched it today at lunchtime and I enjoyed it more, I must say. But again, I still feel like this was an episode where a lot of stuff went on, but nothing much happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose that's the difficulty, really, when you front load a TV series with so much, stuff and a show with the baggage that Doctor Who has, like, you don't go into a new series of Doctor Who just carrying the previous 12 months of adventures. You go back in there carrying the last 58 years worth of stories on your back, and it surely isn't the role of every showrunner to go and try and change some of that or to loosen the weights a little bit and kind of free up. But I think it's really interesting that Chris Chibnall has decided to spend 6 episodes delving into probably the most complex backstory that we have ever had in Doctor Who. And he's going to do it, maybe, maybe not, in 6 episodes.
Yeah.
So there kind of had to be an episode like this eventually, you know, where it's just info dump, techno babble. I kind of feel like it was always coming.
It was, yeah, I think it was inevitable. And my concern is, I know we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves, but my concern is next week will be the same. It will be, because I don't feel like for the answers we did get this week, we didn't really get that many. A lot of the stuff, the revelations were kind of things we already knew with regards to stuff like the Doctor and Tekton and all that sort of stuff. There wasn't really anything new there. You know, we knew Tekton found the Doctor as a kid. We knew there was a wormhole. Yeah. We knew that her memories were wiped eventually. The only thing we really gained from this was that the Flux was the Division's way of ending the universe because of the Doctor. And we'll go into that later on because I don't really get that. None of that really makes sense. A lot of this doesn't make sense to me.
As if to further that point, I'm going to have to start making notes of the things I want to come back to.
Right.
Because you're unlocking memories and I'm going to have to write all these down.
I am like the Chameleon Arch Fobwatch.
Oh, yeah, literally, yeah. You talk about stuff and I'm going to write this down because it's starting to slip away.
It's starting things off. Okay, well, let's begin at the beginning, which is always a good place to start. So we have our recap. We don't have a pre-title sequence, which is unusual, but we are immediately thrown into the story with the Weeping Angel Doctor. And she has that nice little sequence with the angels pottering around them, having a chat. That was cool. I was quite surprised that she just came out of the angel thing quite so quickly. I thought that there was going to be more to that. I was a bit, when it was just like, oh, we've changed you into an angel to transport you because we thought it was amusing. So basically, the long and short of it was, why did you turn me into an angel? For a laugh?
I know. The annoying thing is, that would be a big pain in the bum, like if a previous showrunner had done that. And again, this might be the Chibnall apologist to me coming out, but I don't think it is. I think it's because Flux has been so good.
Yeah.
It doesn't diminish that cliffhanger, you know?
No, it doesn't. No, not at all.
Like, that's still like a crazy, cool visual, firstly.
Yeah, because otherwise, you could say that about so many cliffhangers in Doctor Who. If you take the cliffhangers based on what comes afterwards, you know, you could say that about so many good cliffhangers. Like, oh, well, you know. Like,
but I think you're saying it in that same way, and maybe it's a result of what this story may not deliver on next week, in that kind of, as we've mentioned before, this series, the Moffat-y sort of, oh, that didn't get resolved, did it? So it kind of loses its punch or its sting when you watch it back. And I guess, yeah, that does kind of tie into the wider thing, which we'll come on to at some point, about whether or not we think this is actually going to deliver the goods after bigging it up for, you know, the last 5 weeks. Is week 6 the week where we all kind of go, huh, well, that was that, wasn't it?
This is it. This is my concern. And, you know, I feel like I'm going into Sunday's episode, the finale, I'm always excited for a new Doctor Who being on. I had a moment actually on Sunday when the continuity announcer during Country File finishing said something like, taking a spin in the TARDIS. And I had a moment where I was like, my God, we've got people like saying stuff like that on the telly. That was just not. It just didn't happen when I was a kid.
I do. I still get like that. I still kind of think when the continuity announcer comes up, I kind of think, are these going to be on compilations on like Blu-ray the future? You know, it's going to be weird going back and looking at that stuff. But you're right. Like seeing a Doctor Who trailer on BBC daytime television still feels like, what is going on?
Yeah. So we get introduced to our Ood. He was good. He was all right, wasn't he? Same old bloke from before, same actor.
He wasn't, same actor. He wasn't exactly Brian, but that's okay.
No.
We can live with that. It was nice to have a nude there, actually. It didn't feel like it was sort of distracting you from... Because, you know, they are a universal sort of slave/servant race. Yeah. So
it's like having a protocol droid in Star Wars, isn't it? You know, that is the Ood's purpose.
I'll take your word for that, because...
Star Wars.
A bit of a grey area. Now, should we talk about Tectoon and the fact that I've obviously lost the bet saying it was the Rani? But I think Barbara Flynn was fantastic in the story.
She was so good.
And I think excellent. Jodie was fantastic in the story. Yeah. And I actually think that Division as like an entity going into this final episode and for the rest of the series, I think it's kind of been saved by her performance.
Yeah.
Because if you had somebody, not putting down the guy who played the Black Serpent, but if you had somebody talking about it in an evil way, it wouldn't have worked.
No.
But these people are so convinced that what they're doing is right. Of course, they're very amiable and, you know, very easygoing, like Barbara Flynn's character was. Mm. You know, in that same kind of Delgado vein, where I'm being very pleasant, you know, refers to Joe as Miss Grant, but if you turn your back on him, he'll break your neck, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I totally got that from her character, from Tectoon. And it's just interesting that that character has morphed from this. And I think this is another problem to move on from that again. It's a bit of a scattergun podcast, this one.
Well,
sorry,
it's going to be like that episode. So
I think, I think you're right. It's just a reflection on what we've seen, you know.
Yeah.
We've had this kind of mythical Time Lord crop up in the last year. Tectoon's first mentioned, you know, in series 12. It kind of doesn't feel like it's the right time to like see Tectoon, get the explanation, and then kill her off.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big character in looms large in her legend, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this episode loses a lot of its punches because it feels like they're pulling the trigger on a story that has massive implications that was only set up a year ago, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, I'm not 100% convinced that she's dead, because I don't know. I think that would be such a waste of, you know, Barbara Flynn was so good. You want more of that stuff. Yeah, and you want the revelations to sort of come from her, really, because if she is the Doctor's mother in inverted commas, you know, not proper mother, but mother of sorts. You know, yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of her, but I agree that you feel like there could have been more of a build up to this moment and more of an exploration as of her.
But that's easy to say. And with my part of that answer, I kind of feel like the response would be, well, do you wait 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Which, you know, you don't build telly like that, really.
No.
But I think just because it does appear to have massive consequences for this character's, you know, entire chronology.
Yeah.
It kind of does feel... I think that's the thing that's making me a little bit like, oh, keep this at arm's length, don't get too invested sort of thing. Because it just feels like an awful lot to take in over the course of a year. You know, fine, you know, it wasn't like this stuff is brand new to us.
No.
But to have all those revelations, that to have it spelled out black and white, this is what Division is. And also on top of that, understanding the flux component and the fact that they're between two universes, plus the B plot with the companions was a lot to sort of like focus on. And I'm not sure if I took it all in, but that might be my fault. But
well, this is the thing, you know, I've watched it twice and I'm sat here now thinking, right, let's talk about what the flux is and why the flux is, what the flux is, does it all mean? And I've seen it twice and I'm just thinking, I'm still not really 100% sure what any of it means. So the flux was devised by Division.
Yes.
Because the Doctor, they see the Doctor as a virus that they have let out accidentally. They didn't think that the Doctor was going to go out causing all this trouble being the Doctor. So now they have devised the flux as a means to destroy the universe with the Doctor in it. That was the plan. They wanted to get rid of the Doctor and destroy the universe and reboot in Universe 2. What I want to know is, why is it taking them this long? Why didn't they see Bill Hartnell go off start causing trouble and then go, ah, oh, that silly old git's doing that stuff. Let's get rid of him.
Maybe.
If he's that powerful, if they're everywhere.
But if you think about it in terms of the chronology, like this is the closest the Doctor's obviously ever got to discovering Division. Like Doctor wasn't aware of Division prior to that. So the way that I took the Flux was obviously, you know, there's the black and white thing there in front of you, but part of me kind of feels like there might be an aspect to the Flux where they're covering their tracks.
Right.
And it's like, let's get rid of this because we've, you know, like...
Oh, I see.
And the Doctor's in it. Because, you know, the Doctor was going to get killed by the Flux, you know?
Yeah.
And it was going to be a sort of, you know, the Doctor's getting a bit too close to us. I think we need to write this one off.
Right, I see what you're saying.
And set the Flux in motion.
Okay.
And then that's kind of the way I've taken it.
But, so you're saying that it's more that they're doing it because the Doctor got too close rather than the Doctor's just being the Doctor.
Yeah, then your answer to that would be, why wouldn't they have done it sooner? Now, that might not actually be the case, what I've said, and what you said and your response, why didn't they do it sooner, might actually be a massive gaping issue. Yeah. I don't know. But I just thought that through the way that she was communicating it, maybe it was her affability, you know, being so kind of chill and communicative with the Doctor and chatty. But I kind of took it to mean, yeah, like, you got a bit too close to the truth. And we can't have that because everybody will then imagine if everybody finds out that we have been meddling in their lives in the most insignificant of ways, like that would be a big problem, wouldn't it?
Of course.
So, we have to wipe out this universe and we'll move on to the next one and just start there again.
Yeah. Okay. But I can get behind that. That's made me a lot happier.
Okay. Well, but that might just be like me colouring it that way, but I don't know.
Well, from now on, that's what I'm going to believe. If that ends up being better than what actually happens, then I'll go with that.
And the Doctor has obviously been kind of... I don't dislike it, actually, the Division as a concept and the fact that they may have had a massive role in adventures we've had previously completely unseen.
Yeah.
You know, that might explain a million and one different things. It might explain where did that one character pop up from that suddenly gave this person loads of information about the story. It, you know, it could theoretically fix every plot hole ever. You know?
Well, this is what I was hoping. When she said, oh, we're all over the place and we've got agents here, there and everywhere and we interfere and do this, you know, I was expecting her to say, you know, just purely for the fans, just like, oh, you know, we were, you know, how do you think... You know, how do you think Davros knew how to do this to create the Daleks?
Yeah.
Or how do you think, you know, the Cybermen did this? Or, you know, just little things.
That's the genius, though, I think, of it, is unlike Stephen Moffat being patently obvious and going, Clara is directly responsible for the Doctor deciding to go out there and have adventures or whatever. This is more like the Vision have been there the whole time, but we haven't seen them.
Yeah.
You know, in much the same way that the idea of the silence is cool, because they could be here, they could be there, but we don't know. And I think that actually does lend another aspect of mystery, because, you know, we've still got this... I think, all over the place, the Doctor's fob watch is going to be part of this too, in this sort of sight unseen, you know, like, they're part that they are there, and we're going to assume that they're there, but we're not actually reading the text.
Yeah.
And the text doesn't say... there's a division agent in this scene retroactively in Genesis or whatever. But I kind of feel like, and I hope this is what they do, because I feel like you could give some people answers to the Timeless Children and it'd be satisfying and leave it there. What I think would be really cool is the Doctor's given the opportunity to look at the fob watch. Obviously, we know that the kind of deal was you can have your memories unveiled to you, but we are going to wipe out this cosmos.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like the Doctor is going to reject that even at the end of the story.
Yeah.
And so we'll always have that up in the air, like, you know, where are they actually from? We'll see snippets maybe to kind of make us even more intrigued. Like, are we going to get an answer to that house? I don't know. Maybe that house is just like some crazy visual metaphor that we're not supposed to know the answer for. But I wouldn't mind it if it left us with questions hanging like that.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't mind that.
I was kind of thinking the same thing because, you know, you've by saying that there's all these other doctors before William Hartnell, you then obviously open up the can of worms, just like the doctor was saying, how many of me have there been, you know? And we as fans, you know, we want to know because we're nerds. And, you know, I was talking to Ellie, TARDIS Monkey, about it today. And I was sort of saying, you know, perhaps we as fans get too strung up on this because we're fans. And, you know, for the casual audience, you know, to say, oh, there was a doctor before William Hartnell, well, most of the audience aren't going to even know who or what a William Hartnell is. So, you know, there was earlier doctors. Okay, fine. I'm sure they're probably far more easygoing with that sort of stuff than we are. But I think in the same way, with the sort of dichotomy of, right, you can either have all your memories and join us or save the universe, save the Earth and just carry on as you are. And obviously the Doctor has had this moment in this story where she was like, well, you know, you took me away from wherever I was from. You know, I could have been this, I could have been that. Kind of, again, going back to Star Wars, sorry, Billy, Rey in Star Wars vibes when she was like, well, you know, I was left on this planet and who are my parents and, you know, where am I from and all this sort of stuff. That was my initial thought. But I think the Doctor is going to end up saying, you know what? That doesn't matter. I know who I am. I'm the Doctor.
I think that's going to be it. Yeah.
I was born. I grew up on Gallifrey. I went to the Academy. I was best friends with the Master. Barusa was my teacher. I stole a TARDIS and I went off into the universe and I made a family for myself with all these people I've traveled with. And I stood for right and wrong. You're wrong. And I'm going to put a stop to it. And that's all that matters. I've been all these people. That is who I am. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. And Judy Whittaker. So I think that's what we're going to get. And like you said, then it will be like, so it kind of doesn't matter about the timeless children.
I think that's exactly what it's going to be. But then I can see people getting annoyed going, well, that's X number of years of plot that is just going to get sucked away. Yeah. And it's kind of like, yeah, like fair enough. But at the same time, your problem, a lot of people's problems have been with the fact that they're doing that story anyway. Yeah. So the fact that you've got a resolution that ultimately says, with the Doctor at the center of it, saying, it doesn't matter. All that stuff doesn't actually matter. You know me, like even to the audience, sort of like a meta thing going like, you know me as much as you know me.
Yeah.
You know, you might have known me for the last, you know, since 2005 onwards, you might have known me from 1963 onwards. And so whatever you think Doctor Who is and it's canon or whatever is fine, because he's kind of blowing the back end off that kind of that first section of Doctor Who's life.
Mm.
That if it was basically waved away with a, what does it matter anyway? You've still got all of that to look at if you want.
Yeah.
That's all still there.
Yeah.
I think that the Ruth Doctor is going to be a bit of a red herring in all of it, though, because I'm sure I've seen somewhere that there was something in the episode that appeared to allude to or confirm that Joe Martin's Doctor is between 2 and 3.
Oh, really?
Because I think there was a leak at some point this week, and the leak may have been right through something that happened in Sunday's episode.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
That suggests that Joe is between 2 and 3.
You'll have to tell me after this recording where I can find
it. I don't know.
Fair enough.
That's all I've seen on Twitter. That's all I've seen.
Okay.
But like, if that does turn out to be the case, I'm much happier with that, because again, in that same vein, it doesn't diminish anything from before.
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't sort of drag something from before into the current run of the show and kind of go, this is kind of what it was like, or this is what it could be like, sort of thing. Mm. Like, I definitely, it's just so much easier and so much fresher to just say, that is the Doctor that went off and did Mission Series 6B style, and that was that.
Yeah.
And just leave it. I think that is more likely what's going to happen. But it's just that the Doctor had their memories erased of that entire period.
Yeah. Because I was saying to Ellie, I was like, you know, are we going to get, because I think we can safely assume that Joe Martin will be in it next week, on Sunday, sorry. Because
I hope so.
From what she said in her behind the scenes stuff, like, oh, you know, you've not seen the last of me. You know, she basically might as well have turned around and said, I'm in the finale. Yeah. You know, I was sort of joking like, well, are we going to see a moment where the Division finally catches Jo Martin's Doctor, wipes her memories and forces her to regenerate into baby William Hartnell or little boy William Hartnell and then chuck him out in the bloody dunes of Gallifrey, ready to be found by the whoever, the Doctor Who family. And
the thing that's still catching me though about that whole deal is the police box.
Yeah, what's that about?
That's the thing that's still getting me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it would be annoying if it came around to it at the end and it was like, it was just done for the shock value of that shot.
Yeah.
Rather than actually just doing something that's a lot cleaner, which is just to say, but then again, here I am saying I don't mind the fact the canon's been expanded. But in this instance, because of the police box, I'd much rather them just say it's something to do with being between 2 and 3. I'd much prefer that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise, you're going to get into that, you know, you're getting into that weird area of like, oh, well, the TARDIS that William Hartnell stole was the TARDIS that Jo Martin had. And it, for some reason, always wanted to be a police box, you know. And then when the Doctor landed in 1963 in Totter's yard, you know, it became a police box again. It was like, oh, I'll stay like this because I like it. This is my old form. You're getting into a bit of like waffly wanky territory. And I'm not, I think sometimes things are just, it's Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is usually the best one. And I think in this case, it just happened to get stuck like a police box in 1963. Wins out.
Absolutely.
I think otherwise you're putting, I mean, I know obviously the TARDIS has a personality of her own, but I think sometimes you start injecting a little bit too much personality. Do you know what I mean?
Talk about injecting too much of one thing into another thing. I think that Swarm and Azure have been hugely kneecapped.
Yes.
Coming out of this story, because frankly, I don't care who the Black Serpent is and what their deal is.
It's the Grand Serpent, by the way.
I
think that just proves a point.
Yeah. It's just because I'm thinking White Guardian, Black Serpent. So this Grand Serpent dude, great, you know, good actor.
Very good actor. Good theme. Sega's theme for that character is really good. I do love it.
True. But I don't want them to, they're usurping Swarm and Azure's sort of position in the story. And if it's just so that they could get in a position to allow the Sontarans in, that's a bit lame.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bit of a waste.
Yeah.
And like when they could have just, if the Lupari ships were out of position, bum rushed them and just snuck in anyway or whatever.
Yeah.
I just feel like, I'm not mad on that character.
Yeah, it does seem. Yeah, I mean, Swarm and Azure, you know, we both raved about them from the off, about how good they were and or how good they are. But yeah, these last two episodes completely sidelined, you know, to the point where I just didn't even really know what their deal was. Like, what's the point of them? What are they trying to achieve? You know, and I think it's fine that they weren't in the Angel story. There was a lot going on in that story, and I don't think that they needed to necessarily be in that one. Were they in it at all? That Angel story?
They were. Azure was in.
Oh, she
week.
Pops up, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And I think that was just enough to just enough to tell you, right, there's stuff going on. But then for this week to have very much the same sort of thing, I'd be like, you know, okay, but what are you doing? And, you know, what are you,
well,
you know?
This is what I was going to ask you. What is their plan? What do they want to do? So all those people there, that setup where he said, you are space and we are time.
Yeah.
Was all of that set up so that they could reach Division? Right, okay.
Yeah, that wasn't very clear. And I don't like all this bloody metaphysical way of talking about stuff. Like you were just saying, like, oh, you're space and we're time. Oh, no, stop being so fucking arsy-farty about all this. Just let it get to the point.
We're trying to get somewhere or whatever.
I mean, they did eventually. They said it when they appeared in Tek Teun's greenhouse or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, they said, oh, you know, we use them as like the batteries to form the temporal psychic bridge. or whatever. So,
is their plan still just that they want to be the only two left in the cosmos or something?
Well, they said they want revenge on Division for imprisoning them.
Yeah.
And I think they want to cross over to the other universe and wipe out the wipe out universe one and then move into the next one. And
do the same there.
Probably, I guess. Or, I'm hoping next week, you know, they really come front and center with this and, you know, they take their place and, you know, we actually get some good Azure.
But I think that will hopefully happen because the Division stuff is out of the way.
Yeah.
So all we've, oh no, but then we've also got Daleks versus Cybermen versus Sontarans as well.
There's so much happening.
The fact that they're still down in the tunnels.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's backstory.
Yeah. There is a lot
and
to get through.
And people sold the Flux and get the universe back to some good place by the time the Festive Special comes out.
Yeah. I mean, I have a horrible feeling that the Flux thing is going to be solved by, oh, if I just flip these switches and do that and reverse the polarity. Because she says in the episode, she's like, oh, anything that can be compressed can be decompressed or uncompressed. So it is literally going to be, I'm going to press this button and everything's going to go and then come back to life. And it's just going to be like, oh, well, that's fine. So that's going to be a bit of a disappointment, you know.
Yeah, but it's like, most Doctor Who plots are solved like that, though.
That is true. Usually... That is true. That is true.
I think it's just because the concept is so cool.
Yeah.
And you don't want to make the journey of battling through all of this for the Doctor just to press a button. But yeah. I don't think that will diminish the journey that these characters have gone on. Because, you know, I think that the performances have been so strong and so consistent. And it's like each episode is peeled another layer back of each character.
Yeah.
Especially the 13th Doctor. Like, I think the 13th Doctor from episode one or chapter one to chapter six is a very different character.
Yes.
And I think that will continue through to Jodie's final specials. I kind of wouldn't be that fussed if it's just what can be compressed can be uncompressed or whatever.
And it all comes back.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And I do wonder if, we're saying like, oh, you know, are we going to get all the answers on Sunday? You know, there's a lot to unpack. Maybe we won't. Maybe this whole Timeless Children, Timeless Doctors, or whatever you want to call it, you know, maybe all that stuff will carry on into the specials. You know, maybe we're not done with that. Maybe it won't come to a head until the final story.
Because if you think this was supposed to be a normal 10-episode run,
yeah,
then they would have saved some material back for the next, you know, 3-4 weeks. So I guess because that isn't happening, maybe those stories get budged over to next year and we still have some stuff to go through. And again, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
It kind of feels like, as we said before, this revelation about the Timeless Children is, you know, almost 2 years old.
Yeah.
But, it's, you know, in terms of the show, it was only in the last season.
Yeah.
So if you do another year where you've got a good couple of months separating each new revelation, that might feel like a bit more of like a... Mm. Okay, now we're getting to the bottom of things and okay, now this feels like a part of a plan and it's earned and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think that's very possible. I would not be surprised, and I suppose whether or not I'm disappointed, it depends on how they present it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get all the answers next week and that just gets carried over to the specials. Because they're shot already, you know, it's kind of like they've got all the material there. They knew what they were coming off the back of, you know, they knew all that stuff, so... Maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, I think in a way I'd almost rather that than just this attempt to try and cram everything in to a 50-minute episode, you know. And I my concern is that we're gonna end up having the Doctor like sat in a chair and like a watch be opened in her face, and we're just gonna get the Doctor sat down for 50 minutes getting a bloody Cliff's notes on who was Doctor Who before
and then
the Doctor Who.
In the last 5 minutes they break out, the Doctor breaks out, takes out Swarm and Azure, and then goes and meets up with the rest of the gang, presses a button, everything goes back to normal, and then we get next year's title revealed.
That would be my concern. So I would sooner, something happens. And, you know, I'd love it if, you know, Swarm and Azure got away and, you know, more was to happen with them later on. yeah, that's my concern for Sunday, but hopefully that won't be the case. And with regards to, you know, stuff like the amount of baddies we've got, you know, the Grand Serpent, yeah, he's fine, but like you said, so what? You know, he's just there, really. I liked all that stuff with UNIT. What did you think to the UNIT?
Yeah,
stuff?
Let's talk about that. Yeah, I thought the UNIT stuff was really good.
Yeah.
Has Chris Chibnall solved UNIT dating?
What, by saying the Flux fucked it all up?
No, I think it might also be when Kate is talking about him going back through the records and changing things.
Oh, I see. Oh, and what, and changing dates and stuff.
Yeah, and it might be Flux related, and you know, but I gather because he's, you know, they meddle, they change things to suit them.
Yeah.
If Division are ultimately responsible for shifting the chess pieces in the universe, then there's going to be some inconsistencies. And in universe, you know, the UNIT dating one is a big one.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like all of that was sort of explained. I'm happy with that explanation in that line anyway.
Yeah.
That, you know, that it's all a little bit skew-iff in terms of the data because this guy's been changing things and moving around history.
But I did see that, I think it might have been Radio Times actually said that he might have cocked it up further. With,
oh, really?
With the years and stuff that he's put and stuff like so obviously the big cameo was the Brigadier saying I need to make a call to the RAF or whatever it was. And he is referred to as being a corporal Etheridge Stewart, and that is apparently set the year before the Web of Fear, and apparently it's like impossible to become a corporal and then a colonel.
Oh,
in the military.
Radio Times, shut up.
But then, of course, the other thing is in the
Web. Do you know what that is? That, if it was in the Radio Times, I'll tell you what that was. That was somebody watching it who's a journalist who works for the Radio Times, who's, they're watching it with somebody who was in the army.
Yeah.
Who went, but they were a brigadier, weren't they? Or it was a character called the Brigadier, and he's in the 70s stories. What? And it's 1967, and they're only a corporal. That doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah.
And they, oh, I'll go and write an article about it. Like, so what? You know, it's Doctor Who, and that's the thing you're going to do an article about. And I mean,
I wouldn't have known.
No, I know, exactly. Who cares?
But the other thing is, of course, you know, it always seemed like UNIT was created on the back of the Yeti invasion, whereas this is suggesting that it was the war machines. So that's quite a big change.
That's pretty cool, though. Like,
it is pretty cool. I think when they said the post office tower, I thought, oh, that's actually quite a neat way of tying things together.
And I loved the setup of UNIT, like where it came from, like that first meeting in the grounds of that estate.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it would have come, you know, to have the money to set that stuff up, it would have come from somebody with a lot of sway and with a lot of money and a lot of power, obviously.
Yeah.
So I loved the fact that we saw the origins of UNIT. I think that is not something I would have expected to ever see.
No.
Like, because what's the excuse for it?
Yeah.
But
especially in this story.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just great. You know, I forget the actor's name who was playing, you know, the father of UNIT, you know,
he's in
excellent.
Cold Feet, isn't
he? He's in Cold Feet, yeah, he's a great actor. And he just worked so well as like one of those sort of people you would have expected to see rubbing shoulders with bloody John Pertwee in a Doctor Who, you know. I watched it today, and you know, that moment where, you know, you see all the UNIT troops in there. Like the old style uniform,
and the top secret sign outside the front.
The top secret sign and all that stuff, and you know, the old fashioned sort of computer banks with the tapes running around.
That literally looked like they've watched the 70s Who.
Yeah.
And went, that's what their computer banks look like. Let's just build that.
Yeah, it was so good. And you know, even kind of like a little nod to the Pertwee era by having the TARDIS stood in that sort of space.
And even that little handheld gadget was very of its time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really cool. And I almost thought, like, oh, wouldn't it have been nice? I mean, you couldn't have done it because it's just too much budget or whatever. You know, it'd be too expensive. But wouldn't it have been nice to have had a scene where they went back to the old UNIT lab, you know, and you know, the TARDIS was there, like the old Pertwee one, because they've got the Joe Martin one, you know, they could have just stuck that in the corner. And wouldn't it have been nice to have just had a moment of being like, oh, you know, our scientific advisor is off in Wales dealing with that maggot business, you know, just something like that, and everyone would have smiled with glee because it would have been really cool.
Wonderful.
But yeah, I mean, it was good fun. And the other guy, the guy playing the more sort of politician-y type chap.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He was very good. And I loved the way that they were killed. That snake creature was really unpleasant.
I thought it was really lame.
Oh, did you? Oh, I liked it.
I just thought, like, well, so it just gets into them via osmosis. Like, okay. But like their face bulges because it's in their body.
Yeah.
And it's pushing out through the inside, you know, so forget about there being a skull or anything.
Yeah.
And then it comes out of their mouth and that's kind of it. Like they suffocated with it in their system.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it have been like more grotesque to like see them stop breathing suddenly and they're like, and they're bringing something up.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Face, sort of like the face thing was throwing me off. So I thought, so what's actually killing them? Is it because it's like it's doing figures of eights in their skull and mushing their brain up and then coming out through their, but they're suffocated by something that wasn't there, by their imagination or something. Kate mentions
she says,
suffocating them by whatever.
Yeah, she says that they're suffocated from the inside out.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it looked cool. I thought it looked unpleasant.
I just thought, you know, what assets have we got? We've got a snake. We can add more snakes to.
Yeah.
And it just kind of felt a bit like uninspired to me. But
okay. I thought the creature itself looked quite cool. The design of like the frills sort of thing around the neck. I thought it was kind of cool.
Very Demogorgon.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Yeah.
The unit stuff was really cool.
Yeah. And finally tied up the bloody thing that so many people moaned about for some unknown reason from Resolution. Because obviously when Resolution aired and you have that moment where, unit's been disbanded because of government funding or whatever. And, you know, people went insane. For some reason, people on the internet were going bonkers and calling for Chris Chibnall's head because he got rid of UNIT. And obviously, there was a narrative reason. And I remember at the time, you and I said, no, that's fine. It's also quite a funny commentary on Brexit and all that sort of stuff. And obviously, now we've come full circle and we understand why. So I liked that.
And the line when the doctor tries to get a hold of Kate as well.
Yeah.
And Kate say, well, so we know why or what caused that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's good. It finally answered some questions that may have annoyed some corners of the internet. So that was fun. It was cool to see that. Obviously, the whole reason for the Grand Serpent ingratiating himself into UNIT history by not only setting UNIT up was to stop UNIT from existing at the same time, which is a bit odd. But obviously, this now allows the Sontarans to get in. What did you think about the reveal of the Sontaran return?
I was mainly, at the time, trying to remember how many doors Williamson said were under. Because I thought, he said there's, you know, I said there's about a dozen doors, I reckon, from what I can remember.
Something like that.
And specifically said that number 9 can't be opened. So I was like, well, number 9 can't be opened. So Chris has said he'll never come back to the TV series. So what if all the other doctors come out of those doors?
Oh my God, something?
And then it was the Sontarans. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
To have them pop up on the screen as kind of like they're the ones that the Grand Serpent Great Serpent has been parlaying with.
Yeah.
Was kind of like, oh, I didn't expect them to come back so quickly. Like, cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. But for the big villains that are kind of making that first spearhead attack on Earth,
yeah,
it's like, and it isn't the Daleks.
Yeah, this is the thing.
And that shot as well of the Daleks. I was like, that shot, isn't that shot from
the Christmas Revolution? One, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, that's a bit of shot reuse. I could be wrong. Maybe it is just they reused the set. Oh, maybe they didn't. Maybe they just thought, well, we can just use the footage and animate some lights in.
Maybe.
Obviously, we don't know. I mean, again, kind of like with Once Upon Time, I think the Cybermen and Dalek element of this story is going to be incredibly fleeting. You know,
I think I would say so as well.
A few Daleks barking, exterminate the Sontarans, exterminate the Cybermen, crush all resistance, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
And we'll just see some bit of CGI shit flying around. but yeah, the Santorum reveal for me, it was just sort of like, oh, okay. It was just,
which is hilarious because of how much we were praising them.
Yeah.
And their depiction, and then it's kind of, they're on screen, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because I thought, you know, I think it was a bad idea to have the reveal on the desk, you know, the hologram. Yeah. I think it would have been much better to have had the doors blown open and the Santorans come in. That would have been more dramatic, personally. But it would have been far more dramatic if you didn't have had that conversation with the hologram and the doors blown open and a load of bloody Daleks came out. That would have been really cool, because you'd have just been like, what the fuck? The Daleks are here now. Shit.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, obviously it would have overcomplicated the story even further, but it would have been a cool moment. It would have been a moment that made everyone go, Christ, it's the Daleks. Because I found myself thinking, oh, it's the Santorans. Wait, this is the end of the episode? And then, you know, Azura and Swarm pop up, kill Tek Teun. And then he's like, right, now your turn, Doctor. I was like, didn't we have this cliffhanger like a couple of weeks ago? Didn't we get him putting his fingers in the Doctor's face ready to do a click or whatever? So I just sort of felt a bit like, I was left wanting, really.
Do you think, because generally speaking, as we've gone through talking about this episode, we've kind of gone, oh, that would probably be okay. Yeah, that wasn't so bad sort of thing. Do you think it's the cliffhanger that, because they've all been so dynamic and they've all done something so different, really, from each other, not necessarily the whole show, but from each other, that the fact that this one is just Swarm walking up to the Doctor with a hand reached out, it's sort of like,
Yeah.
Because we know exactly how the next episode's going to play out at the start.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to be the Doctor ducks out of the way and then they have another conversation or some shit, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any actual, like, peril. Like, the other ones did have, like, a, whoa, what happens next sort of thing. Mm. And I don't think the Santorans are big enough to provide that, you know.
No, not at all. You know, it worked in, like, the invasion of time, because the Santorans hadn't been seen for a good few years and, you know, you have no... Their presence is not felt anywhere in that story. Whereas here, like you said, we've already seen the Santorans in the first episode, then obviously fantastically in episode 2, and then for them to come back in episode 6, it just felt like, oh, all right, fair enough. I think the cliffhanger was what really sort of made me go, oh, that's a shame.
Something else that made me go, was the B plot of this story with Yaz and Dan and Jericho.
Yeah.
Basically not doing anything. Just sort of like glow popping. And then worst of all, that scene in Nepal where they go and meet the hermit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's another one of those Chibnall, haha, this bit's funny moments where it just kind of, it's just in there at the worst possible point. Like the joke, you know, the Wi-Fi joke in Resolution.
Oh God, yeah.
Back. But it's another one of those sort of like, what? Why am I watching this now?
Yeah,
like, this is going on for that, and this one went on for far too long anyway. But in an episode where it's like banger after revelation, like bang, 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 hitting us, and then it's like, okay, we've got to have the B plot to kind of break it up. But then you're breaking up the B plot with this.
Yeah,
this guy. This joke, like, it wasn't even that funny, I don't think.
See, this is where I'm going to have to disagree with you. I actually really liked that scene.
Did you?
Which is bonkers, because I don't normally go in for that kind of, like, obviously silly crap. But I liked it, and I thought the guy playing the hermit was excellent. And I just I just liked that whole sequence. And I'll be honest, I did enjoy the... So I enjoyed... the dynamic of the three of them working together and them going off on their travels. And I think had this have been a normal series, I would have not been opposed to have seeing a story where it was Dr. Light. It was just the three of them. And more of what they were trying to do was explained, because obviously from our point of view, last time we see them, they're in the village. And then next time they're in some bloody pyramid somewhere,
and they've suddenly got all this money from somewhere to be able to do all this stuff.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like, well, A, how did all that happen? B, why this little cup thing? You know, I know Yaz has got this hologram from the Doctor saying go off and find out when the world's going to end, which is all a bit weird.
That was a good scene though. I like that.
It was a really good scene. It was very well acted by both of them. My brother when Jodie goes, I miss you. I hope you miss me too, or whatever was said. Something like that was said, and she becomes very forlorn. My brother went, lesbians.
Well, you know, people have been saying it for a long time.
I know. So that did make me laugh. It did take me out of the moment somewhat. But yeah, there is clearly a strong attachment there between the two of them. And obviously, we know they like to roll around on mattresses in the
TARDIS. And there we go. Control exactly,
room.
Yes.
Interesting. She mentioned the control room rather than the console room. So proper 60s old school terminology there.
There we go.
But yeah, it just seemed weird. It was like, well, how would you even know? How would you know about this cup? What's this got to do with anything?
I don't mind that bit because, like, you know, it's supposed to be basically like a montage of their adventure. So I don't really mind having to see all the paperwork they're having to fill out to go to all these places and all the. Because that would have slowed down even more. So I don't mind just seeing the edited down highlights of their trek and obviously Dan with a beard, which was great. I don't get the whole painting that stuff by the Great Wall of China. Like, it seems like it's a visual that Stephen Moffat would have done.
That was my first thought. It was Chibnall's trying to do a Stephen Moffat, but Stephen Moffat would have painted it on the Great Wall of China, not on the floor where I was like, well, all the trees and plants are going to grow over this.
Well, yeah, exactly. And like, so, and they were doing that in 1900 whenever.
Yeah.
So how's Carvanista?
How would he even? How would he even?
Surely
know?
They're still protecting Earth over
the 21st
century. 2020. Yeah. 2021.
Yeah. Like how? Why would Carvanista just suddenly be like, "Oh yeah, look, let's go on the lupine version of Google Maps and see what's going on over in China? Oh, there's a bit of new graffiti. Banksy's
let's
been
see
about.
What was going on in China 110 years ago?
Yeah, it's. It's so weird. And obviously we don't understand how that's going to play into anything because, like he says, I haven't got time travel. So you're sort of like, well, what was the point in all that? Because in the end, they meet up with Williamson, who's really good. I love his character. He is a really good character.
He reminds me of all of the dialogue from yesteryear. I think Chibnall does really well.
Yeah.
Like all of the British corporal stuff.
Yeah.
And it very much puts me in mind of like a kind of Robert Holmes. He loves that sort of like Dickensian, Victoriana, you know, all that stuff, you know, from Talons.
Yeah.
And I think that Chibnall seems to enjoy writing that as well.
Yeah. And I like that. I mean, we talked about it, didn't we, before? But, you know, previous showrunners like Russell or Stephen would have completely ignored that sort of thing and they'd have talked in a very modern phraseology. So I'm glad that we've got, you know, because it's like old school Doctor Who, isn't it? And, you know, that was kind of how old school Doctor Who helped sell the past was, you know, people spoke how they would have spoke. You know, they didn't talk like bloody fucking Del Boy down at, you know, down the market. So that was good. I like that. I'd completely forgotten what on earth we were talking about.
We were talking about Carvanista, the ship, the painted stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, that whole thing just seemed a bit weird because then Williamson comes along and they're like, oh, well, okay, we'll just go off and do this then. And it's like, so what was the point? Especially if he's not got time travel. What's the point in any of it?
What is the point in any of it, Matt? We ask ourselves that a lot.
I know.
Bell and Carvanista's plot as well. That's probably about the only thing we haven't covered.
Yeah.
So... Bell is now... Is she still on that Lupari ship by the end of the episode?
She's still on that ship, yeah.
So I guess Earth will be the battleground. Vinda will get drawn there somehow because... Oh, no, Vinda's...
He's in passenger.
Passenger with...
Diane.
So they're going to... I kind of got the impression from that last line, like, they're going to stage a revolt from inside passenger. And, like, he's just going to go like... And then they're all going to burst out of his chest.
I hope it's from his chest and no other orifice.
Oh, that'd be that. We can only hope that he poos everybody out. yeah, I mean, the Bell thing, I'm still not any clearer on that. Obviously, we're not necessarily supposed to be.
I'm so sick of both of them.
Yeah, really.
Every time they appear on screen, I'm like, oh.
Do you know what?
Just get on with it.
Do you know what really stood out to me in this episode is, like, I think, and this is, I don't know how to say this without sounding mean. Like, you know, when he beams down onto that kind of citadel type place,
yeah.
You know, and he hears Bell's ship going into hyperdrive over the yeah. top, and he's like, oh, hyperdrive, somebody wanted to get out of here in a hurry. And it's kind of like, oh, like we get it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't know how to say it. It was like a child had written that bit. Like,
how
more obvious do you need to make it? Everybody knows that is exactly what's just happened.
It's what I call comic book dialogue, where the dialogue informs what is happening, you know, just
that's
to strengthen what
way
we can
of saying
say.
It. I didn't mean that he writes like a child, but, you know.
And I think old Doctor Who has an element of that as well. You know, there's an element where, you know, they have to sort of spell it out for you. Every time he's, because I watched it both, twice, each time I heard it, I kept thinking, that's very old school Doctor Who. But yeah, it did stick out as like, that's not a very natural thing for anyone to say, you know, that, you know, would I hear a car like zooming up the road?
Unborn child. Neither of these people speak like real people.
No. It's a bit weird. The dialogue can be a bit clunky. I think this is the trouble with the Chibnall stuff, is that the dialogue can be quite clunky. Whereas the dialogue under Moffat was, I guess, quite clever, or, you know, he thought it was clever.
Or horny.
Yeah. You know, the dialogue here can be a bit clunky. I think this sort of stuff can be ironed out. I think if you had a script editor that came in and just went, oh, well, you know, maybe word it this way. Don't say, you know, the unborn child thing. And you're as of yet unborn child. You know, if that was Tom Baker getting to deliver that line, he'd be like, who wrote this whippet shit?
Absolutely, he would say that.
I want to take like peak 1977 Tom Baker, peak of his powers, bring him to the future and say, right, Tom, we've got the script for you. It's called Flux. Read this. I'd love to just... and. What the fuck is this?
You could probably show it to him now, because, you know, no chance he watches Doctor Who. You could probably show it to him now and he'd read it and say exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But that's just, Tom's very hard to please, you know, nothing to do with the quality of the scripts themselves.
No, not at all. I'm sure he'd say that for most scripts written by anybody.
Written by anyone, ever.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what do we think in terms of coming at the story now? I know... We sort of said at the start, we're a bit iffy about next week. We're a bit uncertain.
Trepidation.
Are we feeling
it?
Any better about it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm nervous. I am genuinely like, this is, you know, this could be Trenzalore all over again. You know, we could end up coming out of this and going, what was the point in all that? And that was my concern. I said last week that, you know, the Weeping Angel story was so good. You know, are we then going to watch it, you know, in a few years' time and go, God, this is such a good story. Shame all that division stuff was sort of worthless. You know, what
I really, really hope it doesn't, because I mean, we've sung the praises of this season, and I think it would be such a shame for them to, I mean, it might be a perfect sort of representation of this kind of era, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's just like so close, but there's just something didn't quite click somewhere. And I guess, yeah, there's a fear amongst Doctor Who fans that this could be the same sort of thing. I am feeling far more positive about it than I think if we were in the same situation, but Stephen Moffat was writing the finale.
Okay, interesting.
Genuinely, I kind of feel like he would explain stuff away like that.
Yeah.
And Chris Chibnall's writing can seem a bit like that.
Yeah.
But actually... he isn't that flippant with like an ending or a resolution or whatever. Like, they do tend to have, you know, you can fault them for lots of other things, but they do tend to have a very tight beginning, middle, and end. And I kind of feel like, you know, if he has had a 5-year plan or whatever, that this might be it coming into some sort of fruition.
Mm.
And so you'd hope that that had been planned out. And that, I mean, I don't know, God, we can only hope. I'm hoping that all the Cyberman, Dalek, and Sontaran stuff is just framing or window dressing.
Yeah.
And then we can actually just focus on Swarm, Azure, and the Doctor's past, and then hopefully satisfy other aspects that need looking at.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot that needs to be sorted out, because, you know, we don't really understand how Williamson, how has he got all these doorways? You know, that's what's that? What does that even mean? What's that all about? You know, that there's still so many questions that need answering. And then, you know, because it is only 50 minutes, isn't it? I guess the finale.
Oh, it might be slightly longer. I don't know. But like Matt as well, we've got a multiverse that's been specifically referenced in this story.
Yeah. And that's interesting, like, isn't it? Because I think in the first episode, our first episode on Flux, didn't you mention something about alternate universes? Like, or maybe this all takes place in an alternate universe? That was a theory.
So if it gets wiped out, it's sort of like not that much of a problem.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if the Doctor did wander into the other universe for a split second and was like, actually, hang on a minute. I recognize, you know, all this stuff is the same as that one. You know, or there's something in here that wasn't in that one that should be there, or whatever.
Well, this is the thing. Like, Tektaeun made a reference to having like seedlings of like everything in the universe, so that when they go into the new universe, they can just like germinate them, and everything is just bloop. So maybe that's what's going to happen. Maybe the only way, you know, maybe there is no way to save Universe One. Maybe they are going to do a red dwarf and like jump into the other universe, activate the seedlings, everything pops back as it was, but the status quo is, you know, back to normal. And
Hitchhikers. They do it in Hitchhikers.
They do it in Hitchhikers. Yeah.
Yeah. In the movie. Yeah.
In the film. Yeah. You know, and maybe it'll be that. And maybe it's sort of like, this is kind of like a reboot for the next guy to come in and do whatever you want with Doctor Who, you know. Maybe people have forgotten about alien invasions and all that sort of stuff. Maybe it's a bit of a big bang again, you know. Maybe it just is a bit of a reset button. It's everything that you remember, you know. The continuity still exists, but we've shifted over into a different universe, but all the same characters are there.
That's an interesting thing. Well, one of the things I remember, I think Mr. TARDIS said it once in a video, that I would hate to be the person that has to come in and play in the sandbox that Stephen Moffat has just smashed up. And I think we've referenced that. And, you know, because there is an aspect of that in the Moffat era where you think, God, who's going to have to, someone's going to have to inherit this thing that he's left. So maybe Chris Chibnall just went, maybe the best, the easiest way of just sorting all this out is just, let's do the big one. Let's actually end the universe, because that's never happened.
Yeah.
And we don't go back. And that's that.
Yeah.
And like you say, if we just start off fresh.
Yeah.
From where we left off in the last one. Maybe that would, and that would probably be fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that could be the way it's going to go. I think it would make sense, you know. There's a narrative, you know, reason for why that would happen, you know. It's not like they've gone, oh, we're rebooting stuff, you know, from
bet you a fiver it doesn't happen. I'll give you a chance to earn your fiver back. We stay in the same universe.
All right. Okay. We'll see.
I bet you.
And maybe that's why the TARDIS is all cracked up. Maybe the TARDIS can't survive in the new universe.
Oh my God. Interesting.
Maybe that's the big sacrifice. Maybe the Doctor's like, yeah, I've saved everyone. But the TARDIS, her constant companion, her home, is bloody knackered. It's like she's put diesel into a petrol engine. No.
Wow.
Unleaded into a diesel engine.
That's an interesting thing to it can't handle being
TARDISes aren't meant to work in Universe 2.
Yeah. Interesting. I like that idea.
Yeah.
I still think that it's just gonna be big red button.
You're probably right.
But you know, we can but hope.
And yeah, maybe no one's got the balls to do something quite so drastic.
I think he would. But I just think that, I don't know.
Do you think fans would get pissy about that? Do you think fans would be like, oh, but it's not the same universe that the Tribe of Gum happened in, so...
But like, why would people get personally offended by it? That's like your universe on the telly. It's like, yeah, Peggy Mitchell might have popped up in Army of Ghosts, but it's not actually where we live. You do know that the universe in Doctor Who is separate to the one that we live in, right?
I think for some sections of fandom, you know,
no.
their grip on reality is quite loose. So, you know, as far as they're concerned, they probably are living in the Doctor Who universe.
Probably. And it might be those people, as we wrap up here, that might like to vote for us in the Whovian Choice Awards that have that have just come out. We've been nominated for Best Podcast, Best Host, and for Community Award or something. So, yeah, you can go and vote for us. Community Show, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube has all the links to all the forms.
I thought we might have had, like, Best Smut or Best Double Entendres.
Longest dicks, something like that. Anyway, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for watching the Review of Death this week. Next week, it's The Vanquishers. It's the final story.
Yeah.
Does that title hold any more weight now?
No, actually, I was... Until you said it, I'd forgotten what the title was. And then when you said it, I went, ooh, in my head. I was like, well, I wonder what that actually means. But I mean, I think when we talked about it the other day, is it just going to be like the Doctor, Dan, and that lot? They are the vanquishers because they will rise up and defeat the evil.
Yeah, it's either going to be the Doctor, Dan, and Yaz, or Swarm and Azure are going to give themselves that moniker.
Yeah.
At some point, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see what that means in context. The vanquishers,
yeah.
Like, who were the survivors of the flux then in this episode?
Well, Dan and Yaz and that lot.
But they were survivors all the way through.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird title. I guess the only alternative was here's a whistle stop tour through unit dating.
Yeah. Unit dating, or how I learned to love.
Yeah, around the world in so many years with Yaz and Dan. Oh, and thing. And why was the Grand Serpent sending that Grand Serpent thing about? Oh, you know, they sent people to kill Yaz and Dan.
Oh yeah,
that never came back. Like, one, why would the Grand Serpent even know anything about them? Two, why would he give a shit? Like, what are they going to do?
The Doctor hasn't been able to detect or stop Division meddling anything up to this point anyway. So why would they, when they're not even on his trail?
Yeah.
He doesn't have anything to do with the end of the world anyway.
No, he doesn't even know who the Doctor is, because he sees the TARDIS and he goes, what's that? That is weird. Like, I've thought afterwards, like, you know, as nice as it was to have an homage to Diamonds Are Forever with Mr. Wint and Mr. Kid.
Very much so.
You know, it was a bit like, but what's the point? I guess they just thought we need so much to happen here. We need a bit of action because nothing's...
What they needed to do was wheel in a Bombay surprise and then toss them over the side.
I was going to say, unfortunately, Jericho and Dan didn't tie their tails between their testicles and chuck them off the edge.
And make them explode before they hit the water. No, sadly, that didn't happen. But no. We can hope maybe that'll happen next week.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed those exploding testicles. Right. Well, see you all next week for The Vanquishers. Enjoy that episode as much as you can. Don't start rioting in the streets when it turns out that William Hartnell has never been the Doctor all along and this has all just been a mad fever dream. See you on the other side, guys. Bye-bye. Bye.